Welcome to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com, the show dedicated to green initiatives. Now, here's your host, Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Percival's Place. As you know, my name is Percival, and this is my place. Today, we have two exciting guests, Peter from 2Degrees and Sylvia and Dr. Hall from the Banjeski Foundation. Hey, Peter, how you doing, buddy? How's everything?
Great, thanks, Percy. Nice to hear from you again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on the show, man. How's everything been?
Everything's been good. Signing some new deals and brought on some new team members. Things are really good over here.
Outstanding. Well, you know, I'm glad to hear that, man, and welcome back to the show. I appreciate you coming back on, man. So let's just begin by giving everybody a quick update on what you do and what we talked about the last time, and let's continue on with the discussion. So tell everybody what exactly that your foundation does and your organization does and all that good stuff.
Sure. So 2Degrees Food is working on childhood hunger, and we're the first buy one, give one food company, which, if you know Tom Shoes, means that for every product we sell, we donate, in our case, a meal to a hungry child. We work with leading nonprofits such as Feeding America, World Food Program USA, Akshaya Patra, IMA World Health, and others to basically create and then donate these meals to the children who need them most locally. And we're sold in Whole Foods. We're in Barnes & Noble College bookstores around the country. We just launched on United Airlines, so if you're flying anytime soon, you should check them out. And yeah, that's sort of what we do. We've donated just over a million meals to date in the last 2 years, so things are going really well for us.
That's fantastic. I remember that from before. I remember thinking that you're on the airlines, and I thought that was fantastic. I couldn't believe that you actually made that. That's a major coup for you guys, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually huge. You know, you couldn't ask for better exposure, better marketing. And actually, last Friday, we just got word from JetBlue that we'll be in all their airlines, in some of their snack boxes too. So we're really taking to the skies, and we're super excited.
Hey, that's great, man! Congratulations on that.
Thanks a lot.
All right. So what's the latest update? I mean, what's new going on? What else you got going on, man? What's going on?
Well, you know, last month we donated about 20,000 meals to children in Malawi through our Boston-based partner, Partners in Health, and they're really leaders in the field of community-based health, which means that they're empowering local community members to basically help distribute foods and health supplies. So we just made a big donation there. JetBlue and United are sort of the biggest, exciting new updates. We just brought on a new sales guy named Joe, and he's doing amazing things for us, opening new doors. Things are growing. We really couldn't be more excited. More people are finding out about us, and our mission's spreading. So we started talking to some celebrities as well, and good things happening for 2Degrees.
That's fantastic. Well, you know what we're going to do. Tonight's my first filming of Percival's Place on the air on our television, and it won't air until January. But what we're going to start doing is we're going to start, ladies and gentlemen, getting people like Peter and 2Degrees and Sylvia and Dr. Hall later on. We're going to start scheduling you guys for television because we want to get that kind of word out to a wide audience. And so tonight's the first filming, but you know, I want to invite you on now while I have you as a captive audience. I want to invite you on, and you know, we're going to start scheduling you guys for next year to come on the show. So Peter, you know, I look forward to actually seeing you on the air and talking about further what 2Degrees actually does and what we can do to help you guys out a little bit further.
We would be honored. Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on. All right. So again, so let's just go back from the first show and let's give a systematic overview of what you guys do again. And who's donating to 2Degrees, and what was the motivation behind 2Degrees?
Sure. So, I mean, our reason for being is to help connect consumers with hungry children around the world. You know, that malnutrition is a problem that isn't just in Africa, isn't just in India, it's here in the U.S. too. And our founder's mission was to enable your daily purchasing decisions, the things you're buying every day in your in your typical routines to really have an impact on somebody else's life. You know, it's most of the time we're purchasing just for ourselves, and we believe that for essentially no extra money, you can be purchasing for yourself and somebody else at the same time. And in my mind, this is going to be a revolution in the food industry and hopefully other industries. We're trying to really disrupt the way that people think about purchases of food, that you can be helping other people at the time, and it can be directly connecting you to another person. So that was really the motivation for starting 2Degrees. It was to make philanthropy easy, to make servicing other people in need thoughtless. It was to make it part of your daily activities. So Lauren and Will were really passionate about this project, and they realized that there was a big gap in supply. You know, there's essentially a solution to the problem of childhood hunger, and that's ready-to-use therapeutic food, or also known as Plumpy Nuts. It's these peanut butter paste packets. But there's a supply gap. There's, you know, nonprofits aren't enough on their own, and neither are governments in solving aid. And, you know, you look to the Philippines recently to see how important this stuff is, especially in disaster situations. So, you know, the money is there, and the solution is there. It's just the issue right now of getting these foods and medicines to the people who need them most, which has really been the challenge, and we're trying to address.
Wow, yeah. I was going to talk about the Philippines in the next segment, but since you brought it up, you know, we seem to have an issue with dealing with natural catastrophes. As you probably have seen, you know, the tornadoes. I think CNN said that there was something like 50 tornadoes that touched down right here in the middle of the country just yesterday. And then you have the Philippines and what happened over there. So the question then becomes, should there be some kind of international response team other than the Red Cross, other than the Salvation Army, who can, be at an area in a moment's notice and start coming in with an overwhelming force? In other words, since you had, like for Hurricane Sandy, for instance, you had a Category 1 storm that did the damage that it's done. But it seems to me that there needs to be some kind of organization or organizations that come together and can come back with a larger overwhelming force to counterbalance that. In other words, if you're going to be concentrating on food, maybe somebody else can concentrate on manpower and somebody else can concentrate on something else and give instant relief as quickly as possible. Because there seems to be now other concerns like malaria and other things that are coming out of the water now and all this kind of business. So how is it that we haven't come together as organizations and as a nation to sort of deal with those kind of solutions?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And sort of 2 points. I think one problem is that there are a ton of nonprofits around the world, particularly in the U.S. There's, you know, tens of thousands, my guess. And some of them are raising, you know, $1,000 a year, and others are raising $100 million a year. And right. And a lot of them are doing the exact same thing in the exact same places. So in my mind, what we need is a bigger overarching body to say, hey, there's a disaster here, or there's the biggest need at this current time for malaria pills, TB medications, AIDS medication, any retroviral medications at this one place right now. Let's team up. Let's grab 1,000 of these nonprofits that are doing the exact same thing, take their funds and really direct the powerful force of cash and on the ground, you know, manpower to these problems, because a coordinated effort is going to be more effective. Second point is the U.S. military forces. There's often hundreds of thousands of soldiers who are on bases and not doing disaster relief. And in my opinion, these are really highly trained people who could be incredibly effective at helping relief and not just in the middle of wars. And of course, there are service people who are doing that. But it seems to me that, you know, you could use a lot of this really dedicated, passionate, patriotic manpower for good. And especially in the Philippines, we have soldiers, based over there already. And I'm sure we do have some there. But it seems to me that this is a no-brainer. It's a way to really bring our troops to contribute to these big global catastrophes.
Right. Well, I have another idea for another nonprofit that I'm going to be starting. And I talked to this with my friend and colleague David that we were actually thinking about getting, you know, personnel together who may be, you know, ex-military or who may be young and not, you know, involved with other things, and coming up with that kind of a task force that will actually be able to go to these different places in a moment's notice. Just like, you know, I understand that in Fort Bragg, they can go anywhere in the world in a moment's notice. So that's the kind of thing that I'm forward to do. And to actually coordinate with different organizations and just make it happen. You know, once you try to, you know, get other people involved, you know, it becomes a question of, logistics, you know, who's going to be in charge, this and that, the other, blah, blah, blah. You know, I just figured that I'll just take the bull by the horns and just go for it myself later on down the road and include guys like yourself and other organizations that would be willing to help and just make it happen, you know, but anyway.
You know, this would also be a great opportunity to, partner with airlines here because there's tons of people, hundreds, you know, millions of people here in the U.S. who have very specific skill sets that could be incredibly valuable during these times of disaster. But, you know, people don't always want to pay a couple $1,000s it might, you know, take to take a flight there to actually help out. And this could be a really great opportunity for big airlines to, you know, show some corporate social responsibility and say, hey, you know, in the 10 days or 2 weeks around these disasters, we're going to offer flights to very specific types of aid workers who otherwise wouldn't get here. And maybe even take the next step further and create a website that allows people to put their aid skills, the certifications they have, and then you basically get an email blast in the wake of a disaster saying, we're going to activate you if you're able, and we're going to fly you here on our dime because this is important. We need hands. So I think there's lots of new innovative solutions that could be created for disaster relief. They really just haven't been tapped into yet.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And you know, I'm going to when we get the opportunity, I'll talk to you about it later on and see what we can come up with. Because I think what you were talking about earlier is absolutely necessary. I think we have to do something along those lines. You know, in the Philippines right now, it's an absolute catastrophe. So we, you know, and, you know, when Sandy hit here, it was an absolute catastrophe. So, you know, we have to do something other than just give lip service and, you know, and talk about what are the good things we're doing and people don't really see us out there. So I think those are the kind of things that we can provide instantly. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. So, you know, that'll be fantastic. We'll definitely talk later about it. But anyway, so what else is, talk about some of the foods that you have to offer, before we go to break. Well, maybe we should just go to break right now. How about we go to break and, we talk about some of the foods that you have to offer and some of the healthy alternatives that you have to offer. I'm looking forward to hearing about that again.
Okay. So, sounds great.
Okay. So ladies and gentlemen, stand by and, we'll be right back with Percival's Place.
Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Peter from 2 Degrees. And Peter, what we're going to talk about today is some of the healthy alternatives that you have to offer. So what kind of foods are you giving out, man?
Sure. So right now the snack products we sell is a line of really healthy, simple fruit and nut snack bars. They're all gluten-free, vegan, GMO-free, kosher, and low sodium. We have a chocolate peanut flavor, a chocolate banana, an apple pecan, and a cherry almond. And in my opinion, they're all really fantastic. But that's really just the beginning for us. You know, we never intended to just be a snack bar company, but rather a similar type of Newman's Own company that's both, you know, doing good work, but also has a wide array of products that can be found in grocery stores and coffee shops and bookstores and yoga studios and convenience stores. You know, we want to be the product that people can pick over another because they want to be doing good in the world. So for us, snack bars are just the first. And the next products we're working on will be a sort of granola cluster. We're working on flavored water enhancers, single-serve coffee and tea, and maybe some rice dishes in the future. So we're exploring all different kinds of products.
Wow. Wow, that's fantastic. So, all right, so let's talk about some of the things that you mentioned. What makes something vegan? What makes something kosher? What makes something, you know, healthy for that matter? What is the difference between something Jewish and something vegan, Frank?
So, vegan means that there's no animal products involved, and that's pretty much the simple classification. I'm not super qualified as a food expert, so I shouldn't delve too much into it. But in general, it's devoid of food products. A lot of products we see on the shelves now, and these ingredients you can't pronounce often, are do involve animal products, and it could be hooves that are involved. You know, animal hooves that are in gelatins or gummy snacks. And it really depends. So, kosher means that, the manufacturing facility has been certified, as kosher by a rabbi, and it's a Jewish classification. So, lots of different straps that mean a lot to different people. Gluten, intolerance has been a more recent trend that has picked up in the last few years, I'd say. It's causing a lot of stomach problems for people, and one of our founders had a gluten issue, so we decided to make our bars gluten free as well. So we're really trying to create healthy snack products that can appeal to a wide array of people, from children to moms to dads to college students, and that tastes really good too. And healthy is a vague term these days, or healthful, but there was a Berkeley nutrition professor that says the ideal diet, he said, quote, eat food, mostly plants and not too much. And that's sort of, I think, where we go is include as many natural, simple ingredients as possible in the rawest, simple form. So our bars are basically made of dried fruits, nuts, quality grains that are really good for you, superfoods like quinoa, chia, and millet. And then a couple bars, we have some vegan chocolate.
Okay. What constitutes a superfood now? What did you say? Millet? What is that?
I'm sorry. What was your question?
What you said a superfood? What is? I think you. What was the term you used? Millet? I'm sorry.
So superfoods. There's probably 20 different grains and greens. So spirulina, kale, quinoa. Chia, these are all grains that are really good for you. They have high antioxidants, they're high vitamins, and they're really just, they give you the most benefit for the least amount of calories. And that's really the key when you're eating food, is to get the most nutritional value for the least, fewest calories. And whenever you're eating food, that should be sort of the marker. You're not going to gain weight, but you're going to gain the most positive impact of the food you're eating.
Okay. Yeah, you see, now you just taught me something. Okay, so that's really good. All right, so some greens like kale and spirulina, they're constituted as superfoods because of all the nutrients that they have in them. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, very good. Wow, that's fantastic. So what are some of your favorite bars that you've had over the years?
So my favorite bars of ours is really the chocolate banana. If you've ever had a chocolate-covered frozen banana, you'll get the picture of what our bar tastes like. It's really fantastic. It's a really great blend of both those two flavors and then the crunch that comes with the grains that we add in there as well. And it's our only nut-free option as well. And there are a lot of nut allergies these days in the United States, so this makes it particularly good for schools with young kids, because a lot of these kids have nut allergies. They can't bring nut products to school. So we wanted to enable kids and bring these bars to school to have our product. So making a nut-free SKU is really important to us as well.
Oh, that's very good. Where are you? You must have a farm or something of that nature that you're growing your products from?
So we do source our ingredients locally when possible, but we don't own the manufacturing side of this. We co-pack with a company here in Nevada.
Oh, I see. Oh, and you're in Nevada. That's very good.
No, we're in San Francisco, but our co-packer is in Nevada.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. Oh, so I mean, okay. When you get to the scale of General Mills, it's more easy to own your own manufacturing facilities and own sometimes the farms, but most of these big companies don't even do that. Most people outsource to a partner manufacturer.
That's right. Well, that would make some sense. I mean, because now you don't have to worry about the work.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I understand that. No, that's very good. Well, congratulations on everything. That's wonderful. All right. So, anything new coming up for you? I know you mentioned the coffee that you were working on. Do you have any prospects so far that you're going to be putting where you're going to be putting it in? Any coffee shops, anything like that? Is maybe Starbucks going to take your product or something? Maybe Dunkin' Donuts? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, we've talked to Starbucks, and it seems as though they're more pushing out external brands. Even Kind Bar, which really started sort of that made the brand made the brand, is being kicked out as well because Starbucks is going to be making their own formulations of products. So as for our next products, we still haven't released exactly what we're doing next, but we are working on 5 or 10 different types of products that'll. It'll be the next 2 Degrees products. And when I say 2 Degrees products, it's the brand, but we really, it's really the identity. And we want to bring people into our family, our tribe, as 2 Degrees people. And that means the people who are going to be looking for and choosing the products to give back over those that don't. And our hope and intention is that we can bring other food companies on board as well to take on this mission, to really address the problem of hunger. And it's not just in other countries, it's in the U.S., and it's serious. It's 50 million hungry people in the U.S., and that's a large number when you have a country of, you know, over 300 million. Right. So I suggest people watch a documentary called A Place for the Table, and it's a really good portrait of what's happening here in the U.S. and how the food system's a little off, that there's an excess of food all over the world, but it's not reaching the people who need it. And, you know, food stamps and the SNAP program is all part of it, a lot of which funding got cut recently. But this is all something people should know about, at least have an idea of why people are hungry here in the U.S., yet still there's a lot of obesity here. And strangely, obesity and hunger go hand in hand, that oftentimes it's the wrong nutrients that cause people to be obese. You know, when you have a food system that's overrun by corn and soy, you know, high fructose corn syrup and soy products, which are in lots of processed food now, you start seeing that these things basically have additives that make people addicted to the foods. And that brings people to eat bag after bag of Doritos and Coca-Cola, you know, stuff that ultimately isn't very good for you, but it's making people hungry. You know, you give people these really high doses of sugar and salt, they keep on wanting more, and this stuff is the leading cause of death. You know, it's the types of foods that are ultimately leading to heart disease in the U.S., which is the biggest killer. So this stuff's really important, and this whole food movement we're working on is bringing people really simple, healthy ingredients in food that come as cleanly and straight as possible from the original sources. And that's going to need to happen in the next decade. You know, there needs to be a food revolution that shake people out of these habits of needing that sugar, needing that Coca-Cola, needing those chips, because that's what's killing people. You know, people need to switch from chips to kale chip, and that's going to be something that's going to save our country and start ending this cycle of obesity.
Wow, that's fantastic. Okay, while I still have you on, can you tell everybody your contact information, website information, and all that stuff?
Sure. So we're at 2degreesfood.com, and if people have any questions, they can shoot us an email at info@2degreesfood.com, T-W-O, Degrees Food.
Okay, fantastic.
And, of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, and all of them. Instagram, and our handle is @2degreesfood. And we're just coming out with a new logo and some packaging. Not quite on our website yet, but if you check out our Facebook page, 2 degrees food, facebook.com/2degreesfood, you'll be able to see what we're up to.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fantastic. All right. Well, Pete, I appreciate you coming on the show again, man. You know, I'm so happy for you guys, and you guys are making some really big headway out there. And, you know, again, my congratulations to everything that you've been doing. And, thank you for coming back on the show. I appreciate you taking the time out.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's always great.
That's not a problem, man. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Sylvia and Dr. Hall from the Banjanski Foundation.
And now, back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com with Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Percival's Place. As you know, my name is Percival, and this is my place. And as I promised, I was going to have two heavyweights to come on the show. They're friends of mine, and I'm so happy to have them on the show. Sylvia and Dr. Hall, how are you guys?
Very good. Thank you. We are excited to be here with you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Pleasure. It's my pleasure. I couldn't wait. This has been a long time coming. I am so happy you guys have come on the show, and I want you guys, I'm going to give you guys the floor. The Banjanski Foundation is such a great foundation and the work that it does for cancer. So I couldn't wait to have you guys on the show, and thank you so much. I'm going to give you guys the floor, and please just tell us what the foundation does, and all the contributions that it's made, and your father, and everything, and it's just, I'm tickled to death that you're on my show. So please just take the floor and tell everybody what exactly the foundation does.
Okay, so I think I'm going to start as the vice president of the foundation. My mother, Monique Banjanski, is the president of the foundation, and the foundation was incorporated in New York in 1999, and it's a non-for-profit organization, and foundations, by the way, are tax-deductible here in the U.S. And since 1999, the foundation has done research, scientific research, to confirm the breakthrough research which was done in France by my late father, Dr. Mirko Banjanski, a PhD at the Pasteur Institute, who was one of the first scientists to look at environmental toxins as a cause of cancer and look for natural solutions.
Wow, this is fantastic. So how did your father find out and I don't want to give anything away, but how did he come up with this thing? And I know about the president and everything. See, I'm familiar with the story, so I'm trying not to give away any of the things that you need to talk about. But how did your father come up with this solution? I mean, he's a genius, but how did he come up with this? What was the ingredients? What did he discover?
Well, at the time, you know, you have to look back at the context. At the time, the mainstream idea was that cancer could result from mutation. It was a time where all the money was channeled to the genome and understanding the genome, decoding the genome. And he was one really of the first scientists who looked at environmental toxins. And he created a test to test how much those environmental toxins could induce cancer. Then he had the idea that if nature created carcinogens, probably nature had also created anti-carcinogens. Then he used this test to look for natural compounds that mm-hmm. would, you know, prevent cancer or kill existing cancer cells. And the research which has been conducted here under the control of Dr. Hall has to get confirmation, because science is all about confirmation, and it's about what we wanted to do at the foundation is to get confirmation from the best American institution, and that has happened under the watch of Dr. John Hall.
Well, this is fantastic. Now, I know, later on, as you may not be aware, today is the first filming of my show on television, Percival's Place, and we're going to, it will air in January. So I want to take the time to invite you guys later on to come on the television show so that we can get the word out nationwide. We're going to be on Dish Network on NBC. and it will be seen nationwide. The show will start to air in January, and after that we'll be on a regular basis. So I want to invite you guys on as soon as we start to get rolling. But that is a major breakthrough in terms of cancer research. Now, I'm wondering why we haven't heard, prior to you taking over as vice president, and of course Dr. Hall taking over, being a big part of the foundation, but how come the mainstream America hasn't heard about your father's work?
Well, I think it's fair to say that they're starting to hear about it, but that takes time, and it takes an organized effort on our part at the foundation to educate people who are interested in natural solutions to health problems. And one of the things we do is go around to conferences, speak to different groups. We have superb research done at some of the top institutions here in America. And so we have a platform and we have this content to talk about. But in terms of being widely known, that's going to take a little while longer.
Okay. Fair enough.
I would like to say that one of the tools, to make the story known and the research known about my father has been the recent publication of a few books. There is a book called The Cancer Cause, Cancer Cure by Morton Walker, which has been published last year, I believe. Really is a very good book giving a lot of information, and also how the French doctors have been using the products that stem from my father's research for many years. And there is another book, a little bit lighter, easier to read maybe, called Extraordinary Healing by Dr. Stephen Coles, who is an MD and PhD associated with UCLA, also who tells the story about Mirko Belzhansky. Because not only the research is amazing, but the story also, my father's story, and the way the French government tried to suppress this research is also, could be, a radio talk show by itself.
Yes, and I have to have you talk about that story a little bit, because it's such an important story as to what happened with the president of the country and how the government did try to suppress all of this, and how they jailed your mother and your father. I have to have the audience listen to this story. So please, Sylvie, please give it to us from the beginning, as much as you can anyway.
So you want the story about my father, or you want more to us to speak about prostate and the American research done now?
Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to start with the story, and we're going to do a continuation on this. So I want to do prostate cancer and ovarian cancer as well, but since the audience may not know about your father and what happened, I'd like to just give a briefing on the story, and then we can get into the ovarian and the other cancer.
Okay, so I have to explain to you why there is this foundation. I grew up, my parents were both working at the Pasteur Institute, and they were like nuts about their laboratory, and they were completely passionate about what they were doing. And there was this stream of people coming home all the time. They've been diagnosed with cancer. They were crying. They were desperate. And my parents spending time with them, as a little girl, I had no idea exactly what they were doing. But after that, those people were coming back, and they were very happy. They were sending flowers to my mom and so on. And I grew up seeing that, and at the same time, I felt, that we had no family life. It was all about those people, cancer, and so on. I said, I'll never get involved into that when I grow up. And after that, the world, the grapevine said that a lot of doctors started to learn about my father's scientific publications and started to use the supplements that stem from his research, and with a lot of success and a lot of French people. And at that time, the French president, François Mitterrand, was finally diagnosed with very advanced cancer. We believe that he was already sick with prostate cancer during his first term, and terms, presidential terms in France at the time were 7 years. But that was kept a secret, and it's only during the middle of his second term, in the early 90s, that the president became so sick that he had to be operated, and the surgeon who operated on the president opened so that there was cancer spread everywhere, and closed everything and said, to the ministers that the president was going probably to pass away within a matter of months, and France should prepare for early elections. At that time, the president had a mistress who knew about a doctor living near Versailles, which is a little city not far away from Paris, where there is the presidential palace, the equivalent of the French equivalent of the White House. And she had heard about a doctor who had very good results on prostate cancer. So she asked that this doctor was brought to the president and to see if there was something that could be done to help Mitterrand. And that's how Mitterrand started to take my father's products.
Right.
Much to the surprise to the official surgeon and official doctors, Mitterrand did not pass away within a matter of months, as expected, but started to get better and better and better. And he started to ask questions, who decided this, who signed that, and a lot of people, powerful people in the very high executive circles, became very infuriated that the president was actually getting better.
Right.
And against all odds, Mitterrand did not pass away before the end of his second term. He was even able to survive several months after the end of his second term.
Uh-huh.
Now, some people were, very disappointed that there was no elections. The candidate who was ready at the head of the polls, like 2 years before the end of the term, had time to come down at the bottom of the polls. Somebody else was elected. And in the end, after Mitterrand finally passed away, there was a time of revenge and payback. And it's not the police, it is the French army with dogs and machine guns, which were sent to destroy completely my father's research. He was arrested, my mother was arrested, all the people who were working as a non-for-profit organization also in France who was in charge of developing this research were arrested. My father was handcuffed. And I was at the time a young working as a lawyer here in New York in a law firm as a foreign legal associate. And I had from here to find a lawyer for my parents. They were eventually left home under judiciary control. Mm-hmm. But they only were arrested for 48 hours. But my father had no possibility to continue to work. The lab was completely destroyed.
I see.
And they had no, is their passports was taken away, so they could not travel, they could not go to a symposium and so on. And my father became very, very sick in a matter of months. Okay. And I made two promises to my father. I told him, well, you have to help me. I will do my best to continue, because this cannot disappear. When you have seen, you know, how so many people, I grew up seeing so many people have been helped with that, just said, you know, this cannot disappear. It's not possible. We have to do something about it. If my parents cannot, I'm not a scientist, but I have to continue.
Right. Okay.
And
I need you to hold on for one moment. We're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. And Sylvie and Dr. Hall, we're going to talk about the compounds that were discovered by Sylvie's father. And we'll be right back. Please don't go anywhere with Percival's Place.
Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
Okay, guys, welcome back to Percival's Place. So, Sylvie, please continue on with the discussion.
Yeah, so I promised two things to my father. One was to continue the research, and the second one was to take the case to the European Court of Human Rights. And my father died before we were able to see the results, because it took 4 years. But finally, we had a unanimous decision, which was rendered in the case Beljanski against France, and we won the case against the French government. But, you know, that was only half of the work done. What needed to be done was confirmation that, you know, all this research was indeed valuable. And I knew that if we were not continuing the research, it would eventually disappear. And that's why I decided to team up with Dr. Hall, who has a PhD also in molecular biology, just the same background as my father. And here from New York, he has organized the American confirmation, and we have now a string of beautiful publications that are all about those plant, natural plant extracts that my father researched during his lifetime.
Okay. So, Dr. Hall, can you before we begin our discussion, can you tell everybody where they could reach you guys? Can you give us some contact information?
Yes. So, sure. At the Beljanski Foundation, we are in New York. The address of the foundation is 5 Tudor City Place, 2209, apartment 2209, New York, New York, 10017. And the email is info@beljanskifoundation.com, only one word, Beljanski Foundation, one word. The telephone for the foundation is 646-808-5583, and you spell Beljanski, B like boy, E like Elizabeth, L like Louis, J like Jane, L like Anne, N like Nancy, S like Sylvia, K like Kate, and I like Isabel.
All right. Fantastic. Okay, so Dr. Hall, let's discuss some of the compounds that were found, Sylvie's father discovered.
Yes. Sylvie mentioned an assay which Beljanski used to determine whether any compound to be examined had an effect on the structure of DNA molecules. This was called the Onco test, and it enabled Beljanski to confirm that known carcinogens interact directly with the DNA, and the binding of these molecules to DNA destabilizes the famous double helix of the structure. It is this destabilization of the DNA, which Beljansky determined was the primary step towards cancer. It's the beginning of carcinogenesis. So we spoke earlier also about mutations, and mutations are part of the story. But there's increasing evidence that they come later in the process, conferring more aggressivity and making the cancer cells harder to eliminate. But in the oncotest that Beljansky used, and Sylvie alluded to this, he used it not just to study whether or not a given compound was carcinogenic and had this destabilizing effect on DNA. He also reasoned that he could use the test to see whether or not a compound had the opposite effect of a carcinogen. And that is, it would, in his assay, that meant that you lost evidence for destabilization under the influence of these compounds. And the compounds in question, he found two of them, which behaved as the opposite of carcinogens. One is from the bark of a tree that grows in the Amazon rainforest called Pau Pereira, and the other is from the bark of the roots of a shrub that grows more widely, but it's prominent in West Africa. So both of these extracts then show these anti-cancer effects in a laboratory test, and then he went on over the years to do other preclinical studies and animal studies to show that under the influence of these extracts, tumors would shrink, and they would kill cancer cells in all these contexts, ultimately including in humans.
Fantastic. Now, is this primarily for those two, prostate and ovarian, or can that affect all cancers?
They're very broad spectrum. It's essential in terms of the practicalities to study one cancer at a time and to get a grip on what any compound can do against a given cancer. But if you go back to what I spoke about a moment ago, DNA is DNA. All of our cells have a nucleus full of chromosomes. They're made up of DNA. So if the fundamental step in carcinogenesis is destabilization of the DNA, it doesn't really matter which cell we're talking about. And indeed, one of the most amazing things about these extracts is they have a very broad spectrum anti-cancer effect. And so it's not just prostate, it's not just pancreatic, it's not just ovarian. It's quite broad.
One of my father's latest publications, he published that it was working on 16 different kinds of cell lines. And there is, in France, a non-for-profit organization of people who have been using those products now for many, many years. And there is a very broad number of testimonials now relating to a lot of different kinds of cancer. And that's why we as a foundation are really interested in continuing this research and expanding to other kind of cancer. And actually, our next program is a glioblastoma. We are very encouraged for glioblastoma because it is specifically one of the cancers that also my father addressed during his lifetime, and he was successful with that. So we want to confirm, go further, and understand the mechanism of action.
And I just wanted to add one point to what we're talking about here.
Sure.
What Beljansky also found was that these extracts do not do any damage to healthy cells. So they are selective in their action against cancer cells. They induce a process called apoptosis, is one of the mechanisms, and that's a programmed cell death, which is a great fate for a cancer cell, is to have to die by a self-induced suicide program, if you will. But with normal cells, healthy cells, there's simply no interaction. They don't seem to enter healthy cells efficiently. And, of course, the DNA in a healthy cell is not destabilized. It's not opened, and the structure hasn't been changed by the binding of carcinogens. So the amazing absence of secondary side effects or negative side effects is a major aspect of this story.
One of the first place where we confirmed my father's research in the States was Columbia University with a program on prostate cancer, because prostate cancer is one of the leading cause of death in men, and as well as just, you know, elevated PSA is also a big problem in for many elderly men. And at Columbia University, Dr. Aaron Katz, who at the time was the head of Department of Holistic Urology, was really interested in finding a natural approach that would help all these men and also would offer less toxicity than long-term chemotherapy.
Oh, my. Okay, well, listen, we're almost running out of time, so I want to get two things in really quickly. Sylvia, I understand that you guys are having a dinner in Manhattan, maybe?
We would love to, of course.
Well, I mean, there's a foundation dinner, isn't it, coming
yes.
up?
We do have a, I would not call it a dinner, but yes, we are going to have a fundraising event on December 5th, absolutely.
Oh. Okay, good. You tell everybody where that is, because maybe some people might be interested in joining us.
So the best is to contact, again, send an email at info@beljanskifoundation.com. On the website, www.beljanski.com, there is the information, all the information, but again, the address is 5 Tudor City Place, apartment 2209, New York, New York, 10017.
Yes, okay, perfect. And don't worry, I'm going to be taking you guys out to dinner, because I want to have a nice long discussion on how this can be used for preventative. I know this can be used for people who don't have cancer, but who can also help prevent cancer, correct, Dr. Hall?
Yeah, absolutely. This process of DNA destabilization leading to cancer is a long-term process for many, and it's cumulative. It takes time, but why not have the benefit of a natural compound, natural extract, that can knock out those cancer cells as they transition from precancer to cancerous. So I think that the prevention angle here is very important.
Right. So that's why, okay, so we're actually we're out of time now. So tell everyone again about your product and where they can reach it just one more time, and then we're going to sign off.
Well, the foundation is not, you know, selling, marketing any specific product. The plants that we are researching are Pau Pereira extract and the Rowolfia extract that, you know, stem from Beljanski's research. The dietary supplements with those plant extracts are commercially available, essentially through Natural Source International, who is the company who has provided the samples for the research. But it is the foundation, the Beljanski Foundation, who is conducting the research.
Okay. Wow. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. We're going to do a continuation on this show, ladies and gentlemen, because we really have to dive into these different cancers a little bit more with these two heavyweights. So we want to invite them back on the show in a couple of weeks. And I want to thank them for coming on the show and for you listening. Again, this is Percival Dyer, and this is Percival's Place. As you know, my name is Percival, and this is my place. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. Be sure to tune in for some more exciting guests. Thank you.